All right, we'll call this meeting of the Committee for Citizen Involvement to order, 6 p.m. on, this is Tuesday, April, what day is it?
April.
Fool's Day.
One of mine got caught on.
Our Human Resources Director left for a while, and her staff moved all of her stuff from her office out in the hall. She came.
Well, my son called my husband and said he's skipping school, goodbye.
Okay, well, we have, the first item of business tonight is our survey review for a charter amendment to allow for counselor compensation. Neil Ladati is here tonight, and I know we had a couple of commissioners meet with Neil and talk about putting together a potential survey. So I'll just turn it over to Neil, and you can kind of report back on
Thank you.
Progress.
I think I'll be brief, so thanks for giving me some time this evening, and especially thank you to Commissioner Bean, who's got some stuff going on, right?
I lost track of time. Yeah. Just spread out all over my desk.
So especially thank you for being here. But so our group met and came up with a list, I think, of eight great survey questions. Obviously, it wouldn't be a technical or scientific survey, but I think it's a, you know, a temperature of the community and how they feel about compensation for counselors, what they understand about what their counselors do. And I think it's a tool that would allow us to reach deep into the community using all of our boards and commission email lists, using social media, and using the local media to get the word out. I think if this survey were to be out for 2 weeks, we would get quite a sample size. Technical sample size for Springfield is 400 people. If we do a telephone survey, we typically get 400, and that's a good cross-section of the community. I think we'll get more than that, especially if we really push it through our media outlets. But wanted to see if there was any additional feedback on the survey questions or the how we got to those questions.
Any questions? Yes.
I don't really have any problem with the survey question, maybe with the exception of question two, but one question I have is, does the city have any funds or able to use any funds to promote this issue?
To promote the survey?
Well, the whole concept of the of compensation and the survey.
Right.
You need the dollars, right?
Yeah, I mean, promotion other than just having it on the website.
Right. I think we'll use... I don't know that it will cost us anything to promote the survey to get it out there. I know the reporter, the beat reporter for Springfield, Christian Hill, I'm going to meet with him tomorrow at 9. And so if this is approved, we'll be able to get a story out on Thursday about that. And then I think the TV stations will pick that up. Our social media reach is pretty big. And if we do need to advertise it, if it just seems like we're not getting the feedback that we need, then we can advertise.
One of the concerns I had is if it was just a survey that was posted on the website, whether you'd actually get a cross-section of response.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at the rest of your garden and various sundry, because the other thought that I had is possibility of maybe sending out the survey with a sub-billing or something like that.
Yeah, those are traditionally difficult to get in. You have to schedule them far in advance. But I think with if you look at our Facebook pages between the city, the library, and the police department, there are three of the most popular Facebook pages in Oregon of any city. And so I think we get a pretty good reach through those three. I also think that you're right on. We probably will not get a lot of feedback if we have it on our website. We'll put it there. But that'll be the least amount of feedback. The rest of it will be through social media and the local media.
And what was your question about number two? You said that,
with
the exception of number two.
Well, that's the only one that I didn't feel really strongly about. But, I mean, basically, it's not a major
was just wondering if there was anything that we should discuss or talk about in regards to that.
Well, one of the things, I suppose that question could also include contacts with the mayor as well, because the mayor occasionally has open office hours where she can talk to the public, and so whether that could be incorporated in the question as well, something that,
yeah.
Have you ever
contacted the mayor or your city councilor?
Yeah, that's a good
point. I think that's a good
point. I might just take off first service too.
Yeah.
Just contact.
Yeah. Or just say for an issue of concern or something.
I wouldn't even say that.
Contact.
It just happened. Leave it real open ended. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. We were just trying to get a little bit of context with folks, so
sure.
I think leaving it open ended.
See
is
you
a good
as
idea.
The answering. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yes.
I'm not sure if Dan Egan would put this out to the chamber members, but for sure Jeff would put it out to the Spring, or I can, the Springfield Leadership Alumni Group.
Okay.
Jeff,
I'll talk to Jeff.
Yeah, I've got the email list and Jeff has the Facebook posting, so we could do both.
That's a good idea.
I think one of the other things that, as I was reading down through this, number 7, you know, it frames this issue of, you know, proposed compensation, but it really doesn't get to the total fiscal impact until the final paragraph, which my question was that part of the survey or not? I would recommend that you move fiscal impact to the city is approximately $27,000 a year up into before that last sentence in number 7. Do you see what I'm saying? So that would read per month for each counselor. Fiscal impact for the city would be approximately $27,000 a year. So then you're really fully framing that question, framing that issue before you say, is this too much? Is this too little? Or is this about right?
And then I do like the background. It's, you need something to compare to. So right after that in the background, makes sense what Eugene is doing, and so people know it's not that outrageous, the 500 and the 300.
And then the other feedback I would have, this is just my feeling, that final paragraph again, that additionally, that last sentence, in my mind, that's really not part of this issue. Currently, city councilors under the charter receive, they get, if they travel in support of city activities, they're reimbursed just like an employee is, basically at the federal rate. And I think it kind of is a little confusing to say that. Really, what in my mind the council is asking is specifically, should we be compensated?
I agree. I would not add in the reimbursement piece.
Okay.
It's a separate issue. Yeah,
it's not
an issue at all, actually.
And
that's not going to change. That's reasonable.
Yeah, it is touched upon in the very first paragraph, and then we repeated it. So
I would say on the flip side too is, would people feel that you weren't sharing everything when you're trying, if they were to find information like this out after, would it have somehow, if they feel like they're getting reimbursed for mileage, already, and this would be in addition to that, would they feel that they're already being compensated enough for this? And I don't know.
Continue as an added compensatable expense. It's actually not. It's just reimbursement. It's not compensation.
I think if you look at the last sentence in the first paragraph, it's touched on.
Yeah, because the last sentence down at the very bottom doesn't really make sense. I know. I hear what you're saying about. You want people to know that that's going to continue, so maybe it could be said in a different way. But reimbursement, continue as an added compensable expense, that could mean more additional compensation, and that's too confusing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I read the second sentence in the top paragraph, and, you know, it says pretty straight out, the council may prescribe a plan for reimbursing for costs that they incur or expenses they incur. So you kind of frame it there, that's already in place. I mean, that's how I read
that. What do you think, Neil?
I think that Commissioner Saliday brought that up, and I put it in that first paragraph. That was during our meeting. Why I added it at the bottom was, there was no particular reason other than we wanted to make sure information was in there, but it is touched on briefly at the front. So I know that was one of your concerns when we had.
So
just didn't want to seem like they were hiding.
Take the bottom off.
Information. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I would think that would be helpful. Except for the fiscal impact, which we'll move into question 7.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Does that sound good?
Do you want to have question 8 after that background? It kind of depends on the format of the survey too, but I'm not sure that you're going to get people continuing to read past background. You might get people missing that answering question 8.
Yeah, I think on the survey it will pop up that they are, you know, 90%
okay.
complete.
Survey
and then
monkey.
So they'll know.
It's a survey monkey.
It's a survey monkey.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So they'll probably see one question. And we went with that background specifically from the guard because we thought it was a neutral third party that was.
I like it.
Yeah, that's good. Rather than us paraphrasing,
right? Yeah.
You know, that is right out of the guard.
So I think if we're going to move forward and there's a story in the guard which would come out on, you know, Thursday morning, I can have the survey ready by then and on all the proper outlets.
Cool. Nice.
Love.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and then planning forward then, you would see this out for a couple of weeks. And when would we be able to get back together and review the matrix of information that you pulled together for your survey?
And then don't we need to schedule a public hearing too? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would look to Brenda to see.
I'm trying to pull up my calendar. we can go public hearing April 15th and any meeting after that.
Maybe we need to get back together to discuss it April 15th and then a public hearing.
May 6th.
In May.
Well, I don't know if April 15th is going to give Neil enough time to pull
the
information together.
I think we pretty well have a full work session for the 15th already, don't we?
And that's tax day.
And that's tax day.
Yeah.
Yes, I was
asking. Yeah,
asking,
what day is
asking if I could be excused.
That should have been so
much. Chair, Commissioner James.
No.
I will be at the office until late.
Neil, are you going to be coming back to the CCI?
Yes, I can.
So do you want to do that May 6th?
Okay, let's do that.
And then public hearing May 20th?
I think it'd be good to have the public hearing. Now, that still gets us in the time frame that you need to be in to report to the council and
yes.
moving forward. You
yep. were so efficient.
You were.
Sounds good.
So,
all right.
Speaking of efficiency, I wanted to leave something with you. Mary Bridget, city attorney, has put together what you requested during our first meeting, which was give us some ideas on how this compensation plan might work within the charter. So I thought I would leave these with you, and as we meet again, we'll pending the survey, in which way it tells us to go, we can review that.
Because it's still my understanding that our next step after the survey will be to draft language.
And she is, for the ballot measure?
Well, the ballot measure, but also for the public hearing, because we want to present that, don't we, for the public
right.
hearing. So that will be our agenda when we reconvene.
Right.
Okay.
And Mary Bridget and the extern that they have over at the city attorney's office did some great work of looking through all of the information available in Oregon and kind of putting it down in these three pages. So
would Mary Bridget be available to be our May?
I think she would. She was planning on being here, but she has
she's right over there.
Yeah, she has another meeting that she's.
No. Okay. Because then she could be here and say yay or
she is.
Boo or hiss.
Well, I mean, there's actually two sets of, I mean, you have the ballot title language and then you have the charter language.
Right.
So I mean, we're eventually going to be looking at both of them.
And maybe there she is now.
That may or may not be within the scope of
what we do
yeah.
as well. That probably our recommendation, I mean, what we've been asked to do, correct me if I'm wrong, is acting as a CCI, formulate some sort of a recommendation to the city council.
Right.
And then if we come back to them and say, yes, favorable, these are our findings, or no, not favorable, these are our findings.
Yeah.
Then it's really up to them to
draft
the language.
Well, I think, yeah, we create a framework, and then, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, to get it legally filtered,
yeah.
and, yeah, create it through Regal or through Neil.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
All right, any other questions?
Thank you for your time.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
Yes.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Okay, the second item on our agenda tonight is the Springfield Franklin Boulevard Public Outreach Plan. And David Greaser is going to talk with us about that tonight.
Oh, beautiful.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
We can zoom in and out as we're talking.
How cool.
That's the big time.
Sure.
All right, well, good evening, commissioners. Good to see you all again. And I've been finding out that Ellen Tennedy, she works with Cogito Planning, and she has been instrumental in helping us to this point in this Franklin project and the public outreach. And she will continue to be working with us closely. And I wanted to give an opportunity to introduce her to you. And then she'll assist me with any questions you have. So, if you want to add anything.
It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Thank you. So, in your packet, you see the Franklin Boulevard Public Outreach Plan. And one particular thing I wanted to mention was in the title itself, it's rather than public input or public involvement plan, it's specifically labeled as public outreach plan. And so the reason that is as you know, we've had several years of public input that has brought us to this point in the project that you see here. And the stage that we're in right now is, it's called NEPA, so it's National Environmental Policy Act. And we've gone through a lot of planning to get to this point, and what we're doing now is looking at the project envelope for the roadway, where that roadway expansion will happen. And in order to do this roadway project, you have to go through this environmental analysis. And when I say environmental, it's not just your traditional thought of the environment with nature and birds and that kind of thing, but it's also inclusive of the social environment, the economic environment, things like that. So we'll be looking at potential impacts to property owners and businesses that I can walk you through briefly here on this map in a moment. So where we're at right now, like I said, is the outreach piece itself. So we're wanting to inform people as much as possible where we are at in the project, and as we move through it on significant milestones, what's happening, what are things that they can expect, things like that. And then once we get through this NEPA piece of the project, the environmental piece, then we'll move forward with the actual design that would occur within these black lines here. And then once we do that, we may come back to you and amend this public outreach plan. There might be some things that we want to add in there as we're working on the specific design piece. But for now, this is for the NEPA portion of the project. As you see in the public outreach plan, there's some key pieces that I just wanted to highlight. And one piece is actually a lot of face-to-face meetings. And Up to this point, just recently, Ellen and I have had the opportunity to go out first in October, and then most recently this last month, we've been setting up meetings and talking face-to-face with property owners and business owners that are directly adjacent to Franklin Boulevard. And so what we're doing is we're showing them this map and talking to them about where we're at in the project and any potential impacts. The important thing to know, though, that we've been sharing is this isn't a final building envelope for the project. We did present this to the City Council on February 24th, and so we got the local head nod to as this is the project envelope, but then at that point, we've we're moving it forward to the Federal Highway Administration for their review, and they'll be the ultimate ones that give the head nod or not in terms of where this project envelope is, but they want us to identify the potential impacts to businesses. There are no impacts to residents on this project, but each of these colored drawings you see on there, that represents businesses that will have some sort of impact. For example, the yellow represents parking that may be.
That's a good point. Through all the issues and all this urban planning over the years, the community down there has been, what are you going to do to our houses? There's not one single home displaced. Our businesses get hammered. No homes.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And then also in our communication to the businesses, the property owners, is when we spoke to council, they really stressed that they wanted us to communicate to, especially to the businesses that are there, that we're going to work with them as much as possible through this process to try to make it as smooth as possible. That said, I mean, there's obvious impacts that do occur, but we have enough time out there that we can do this in a way that can try to, you know, smooth it over in terms of trying to, if we have to relocate somebody, to do that in a way that's as non-impactful as possible.
How many businesses have
We've spoken to every single one on this corridor, with the exception of, we have a couple left. We have, for example, U-Haul. I'm scheduled to meet with them on April 11th. And then Oldham Crane. We contacted them in October.
Yeah, I know.
That didn't work out. But we're contacting them again to see if we can talk to them. And do you have any others?
Well, sometimes as we get going, we find, oh, there's somebody new or somebody is actually in between these two in the back, and then we have to, you know, we do a little detective work to try and get to that person, and we probably have two outstanding like that, but yes. Otherwise.
So the majority of them, well, I guess I don't know, but businesses that don't actually own the property but are there that are going to be impacted, what kind of feedback are you getting from them?
That's a good question. Yeah, there's a lot of them that they're just leasing the property,
right,
or the building. And, there's a lot of concern about where their business will end up.
I can show you an example. Yeah, okay. It's okay here.
And then I would love to know what your colors mean there, because I can't read that far.
Sure. Yeah, this piece of property here, I know. That building's gone, right through the middle of it. And I have somebody, Summer's Car Lot is leasing it. So they've talked to me, and I know it's going to happen. And Summer's apparently talked to him.
Yeah.
So we're okay. A lot of others out there are probably a lot more upset than us.
Yeah, and so definitely, some people are this different reaction. Some people are understanding, they feel like there's enough time, and they are aware that, you know, when community grows, these things happen. Other people have some emotional reaction, more emotional reactions and concern and stuff. So, but a lot of it comes down to relocation and then compensation as well.
One of the real positive things they're going out way early. Some people will go into shock, be traumatized, and eventually incorporate that thinking in what they do. So down the road, it's going to be much easier to accomplish this.
Well, I think that shock sometimes is they didn't read the information, or you know, something happened to the information. So I think this is such a good way of really connecting with the businesses, and like you said, that so they're not shocked, because this is such a huge impact.
Trying to stress the importance of those face-to-face meetings that we have with people, because often if you just send a letter and a map, for example, you know, if somebody can just see it.
Exactly, right. And these are businesses that you want to stay in Springfield, and if they're going to be happy and move, you know, across the way, then that doesn't help the city by any means. So this is, I appreciate what you're doing.
And the reality is, David, this is actually moving on a, I mean, we're talking about being way out ahead, and I think we are, but phased construction, potentially, for the first phase of this project is like in a couple of years.
Yeah, let me take that opportunity just to kind of orient you on this.
Yeah.
That's all right. So phase one, that right now that it looks like we'll have construction funding for, goes from the McVeigh-Franklin intersection and then heading over here to Mississippi, to Reading here. That's phase one that we've gathered funding for, but that funding likely won't be available until 2016. So what we're telling people in that area is it's looking like we'll start construction in the summer of 2016, contingent on approval from the Federal Highway Administration for this, for the impact. For like, whoops, this was lovely black screen. See, there we go. And then the rest of it, looking west, we don't have a penny of construction funding right now for it. But the reason why we're talking to everybody is that we are doing the design work for the entire thing. It's a 3/4 mile segment. It doesn't make sense just to design a little segment of it on a roadway project like this. And
what are the colors in there?
Oh yeah, so the red is what the label is, full impacts to a business. It says building right of way. So in other words, some portion or all of the building would need to be purchased and removed in order to.
Could you zoom in a little bit so we can actually see the line? I can't, you know, we can't really see the.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see, hold on, bear with me. I'm going to zoom in on one segment of it. Oops.
Yeah, there
you go. Is that better?
Yeah, see the black line.
All right, so, yeah, the black line is the future right of way.
Wow.
The white lines are the parcels. This white line right here is the existing roadway, right here.
If you look above, you see the proposed cross section.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of lanes.
Yeah, a lot of lanes.
What's this, that jagged corner in? Yeah.
So many people ask this question. That is for this roundabout. This is a roundabout intersection here. And because of the way roundabouts are designed,
right,
they bring cars down and angle them. So the red, like this is Goofy's Muffler here. We're taking a portion of that building there in order to do this. Gene Lock and Safe, that's a full take.
Yeah.
And we would have to purchase the whole thing. Some of these that are labeled red, we'll probably have to purchase the whole thing. But a lot of it depends on the landowner, you know, the business owner, if they want to try to, like this one, there's the majority of it is staying there. So we could potentially try to work with them on reconfiguring that building, depending on what their needs are. The one that Mr. Shermo mentioned, Summers, that looks like it'll be a full.
Okay, we have a couple of questions. Tim and then Stacy.
Well, purple means what? Yellow means what?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Purple.
Purple is vacant on here. Although we discovered, like Ellen was mentioning, when you're out there in the field, you see changes. I mean, just since this map was printed, this says vacant. Glenwood Flea Market, right next door, there's a, it's like a saddlery shop moved in there. And so we saw that, we walked in, talked to the owner. This owner wasn't very, the owner of the land, he wasn't very happy with this because the tenant then was saying, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to stay here long term if this is happening. So that's an issue we're running into, is that...
yellow means...
Oh, yeah, and then yellow is like basically parking displacement or access displacement.
Okay.
So this is Big B tires, and we're taking this front portion of
okay.
the lot, which is their parking. But this is a great example of one potential way that you could reconfigure things is you could have access back here, clean up all these tires, for example, and then have the entrance of the building back here. I mean, that would be a potential thing that we could work with the owner on if that was something they wanted to stay there or not. That's just an example.
Okay, Tim, please.
Now, is that black line, that's not a final decision line, is it? Because my understanding is when the conversation with Tom Boyette is that going through NEPA, you wanted to start with the maximum
impact.
And then whittle it down as the decisions are made on what the various usage of the thoroughfare would be.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. This would be the maximum footprint of the project. And this is the outer boundary. And then in 6 to 12 months, depending on which NEPA process the feds have us go through, we would start the design work within here. And as we do the design work inside of this right of way, it could shrink a little bit, you know, as we're tweaking the medians or the lane width, things like that.
So then that could be the potential setback then, or is it going to be additional setback from where that black line is?
So the black line would be the very edge of the right of way, so like the sidewalk up there.
Okay.
The setback is based off the zoning, and I don't have that in front of me, but I believe we have zero lot lines for the new, in the new Glenwood refinement plan. So, for example, like Planned Parenthood, when they went in, that was just a few years ago that was built, we actually sat down with them, showed them the plans we had to date, and said, this is where we think the new right-of-way is going. So that's why they built that back. But you can see it's a lot closer than it used to be.
Another issue that on this corridor is jurisdiction transfer.
Yes.
What's the latest progress on that issue?
Sure. Yeah, the jurisdictional transfer, so we're nearing the final stage of that, where right now, up to this point, it's been the state's jurisdiction, so ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation, and then the city of Springfield is wanting jurisdiction. So as I understand it, we've come to agreement in terms of the monetary value of that transfer, where the state would pay the city a certain amount to take over jurisdiction of that. That's a negotiation process that the two agencies have gone through. And basically, the reason why the state pays the city to take it over is because the long-term maintenance and operation of it obviously costs a lot of money. So anyways, yeah, we're right near the end of that process, which is good. I don't have an exact date. I would say probably
the
calendar
year.
Yes.
In the middle of it, isn't it?
Yeah. We've pretty much gone through all the negotiations. I think now it's just more the probably the final logistics.
Because one thing that I was wondering is, and I know that a lot of those different features of the corridor are mandated by the state. The transfer of jurisdiction to Springfield, will most of those, or any of those mandates go away, or we have more flexibility in how the corridor is planned, or we still have to follow those mandates?
So that's a key reason why the city wants jurisdiction, is we think there's more flexibility that we'll have as we design this. If we're leaving this under the state jurisdiction, we'd have to go through numerous design exceptions from what the state would normally allow. And when you have an area like this where you're trying to redevelop the land that's adjacent to the roadway, it can be really problematic if it's a state highway, because you know the state's goal is to get traffic through from point A to point B. And when you have a city that's really trying to promote redevelopment of the land, our goal is, well, to accommodate traffic through there, but to also use that roadway to help connect the land uses to the road and to facilitate redevelopment.
One of the issues that I had when we were looking at this in the Glenwood Refinement Plan project is having bike lanes on Franklin, which are a little bit redundant when they're looking at a bike path going east-west along the riverbank. So, I mean, any way that you can conceive of that would narrow the impact a little bit, it should happen to be one of them. Hopefully that, I realize that ODOT had that as a mandate, that it had to have bike lanes.
Yeah.
But the question is whether, you know, under city jurisdiction, whether you should get out and play that.
And we'll get into those kind of design details, you know, in the not too distant future, and you guys will definitely have a chance to weigh in.
One thing I've noticed about the bike lanes, ones along the river, people just like to ride along there. There's some people move through there pretty fast. And on the highway, those are the guys who are going one end of town and the other as fast as they can. They won't go that very fast. They won't go on the highway.
Well, the thing is, though, if you have, what, four or five roundabouts on Franklin, then they may prefer the riverbank instead. Plus the fact that you can get a bridge across Island Park, it'd be a good thoroughfare.
Yeah.
Do you have any concerns about how the community will embrace so many roundabouts?
Yeah, you know, we've been, like I said, we've talked to every single business property owner along here, showed them the roundabouts. We've had a couple check-ins with the city council on the roundabouts, and then as you can see, the public involvement with our outreach plan, we'll be talking more to people about the roundabouts. But so far, you know, most people seem pretty supportive of it. I will say a couple of the businesses we spoke to, for example, Mermo and Sons, they had concerns about freight going through there and making sure they're designed in the right way. So from a few different entities, I would say freight is one of the
You haven't talked to Oldham yet, but that's his concern.
Yeah, yeah.
I also have concerns about so many roundabouts, because it's still a thoroughfare, and we still want the traffic people to want to go through there in order to service the buildings and the businesses. That just seems like a lot of roundabouts.
Yeah, one thing I'll definitely take on your concern. One thing with the roundabout, when the engineers were looking at those, so by having the four roundabouts in there at these locations, the mobility that it provides is actually ends up being better than a traditional signalized intersection. And so by doing that, we don't have to, at this point, put in dedicated MX travel lanes. There are dedicated MX bus pullouts at each of the intersections, but because of the flow of the traffic with the roundabouts, it's actually saving us that infrastructure need that would otherwise be there for the separated lane of the annex bus. People definitely, you know, do have concerns about roundabouts. And I know in the past, like pedestrians and bicyclists sometimes express concerns, but a lot of times you can design them in a way that can really improve conditions for bikes and pedestrians. But as we go through the design process, we'll be pulling in key stakeholders, also the senior and disabled community, making sure we talk to them about what their needs are and freight and things like that. Are there any other specific comments on the public outreach plan or questions or concerns?
Well, it looks like it's fairly thorough to me. It looks like you're going to be you know, I think you're already talking about communicating directly with folks. You're going to have lots of opportunity for public input and during the process. And, you know, there are businesses along there. We talked about this, like the Roaring Rapids and some places that you could have some meetings, I'm sure, and invite business owners. And you know, it's important, I think we can't approach this, but it's important to get to the property owners as well as the folks that are in the businesses, because you know, if I was a property owner and I owned a business there and you came in and talked to somebody who was leasing that property and said, by the way, did you know, I mean, I think I might get a little upset at that as well. So you know, I think it's important that you get to the property owners.
As a property owner, I showed you that Summers.
Yeah.
We're negotiating a new 10-year lease with Summers right now, and I expect him to get 10 years before this hits him pretty close.
The other stakeholder here is all commuters. That is such a busy commute. So I don't know how you capture them, but the public will.
That's a good point. Yeah, we have about, right now, about 15,000 trips per day that go through there. Yeah, most of those are not people that are stopping.
And not just business owners and property owners, but residents as well.
They are, the residents that's going to Duval or going to Eugene and,
Yeah, Ellen just pointed out in the plan there is a section. What's it labeled?
It's called Franklin Boulevard Users.
So that's definitely an important group we want to consider.
And even more so when it comes to pre-construction and construction, when it will actually be more important to them. And to address your other thought, just in addition to specific organized focus groups at the time the roundabouts are being designed to make sure that everybody's issues are being taken into consideration at design, that additional public information about how to drive them, you know, and the benefits of them should probably accompany the construction phase as well as the grand opening.
How does LTD and EMX tie into this process?
Sure. I would say they're a project team member or supporter. The city is leading the project. It's a roadway project, but obviously there's transit is a component of the project. And
any transit money coming?
Yeah, so I was going to mention right now LTD is applying for a grant. It's called the Connect Oregon 5. And they're applying for, I think it's about $800,000 to do the bus stations that would be located in the phase one of their project. And that application was worked on jointly with the city staff and LTD staff. LTD was the official applicant. The application, it goes hand in hand with the funding that we've already received for the project itself. But this would be focused just on the transit stations. And we'll be working with them closely as the engineers start working on that design within the project envelope of where the bus stations are located, how they're accessed, and things like that. So they're definitely a very key stakeholder in this. And they will have some skin in the game, so to speak, with her as well.
Excellent. Any other questions related to the
I would like to encourage you to contact David or me if you have ideas. We're going to pick Steve's brain, and you can see why you know why. Or some of the ways, in addition to Warren Rapids and Dairy Mart and Restroom Press, we've already gotten invitations to be able to use those as outreach venues to just meet with people as they are being in the Glenwood, in the Franklin Boulevard area in their daily lives. And we'll hopefully be able to do that by dry season when people are out walking around or moving around and able to reach them at that time with the lemonade stand and the poster and making relationship building at that time. But if you come up with other ideas that you please just let Dave or me know, and we would really be delighted to take advantage of your insights.
That's a great picture.
Yeah,
you'll see it.
Cool, you could hire my daughter. She'd love to.
There you go.
More people would stop for her, too.
Yes.
Definitely encourage you, as Ellen said, to contact one of us. And I do want to just mention, we're really happy to have Ellen on board in her group. She does this public outreach as a specialty every day with her job. So she's definitely bringing a lot of expertise to the table, which we really appreciate.
Thank you. we were wrapping it up, but have you had any pushback, such as people threatening to put up no build signs? Have you had any of that yet?
Nobody has specifically mentioned that. I have seen at least one of those signs up. I think it's at this monthly site.
Okay.
I can't remember specifically, but I think that's where it was. But you know, a couple people have asked in our conversations, is this a transit project? We say, well, transit's a piece of this, but it's a roadway expansion project as well. And, I got to say, yeah, generally people seem to be pretty positive about the overall project, but it's more specific concerns about, you know, when this happened, how will my business be affected, which is totally understandable.
I think as developers come in to develop the planned development area, I think people kind of see it just as all inclusive. So you might end up with some sense of that, and the community would embrace it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think the redevelopment of the land.
If you want to get a little different feel for roundabouts, my experience has been Australia.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over. But take Google Maps over and drop down on suburban areas in Australia and look at them. They're everywhere in areas like this. And I've been able to work very nice except to go the other direction.
some of the other kids go the other direction already.
So give you an idea how they fit.
Yeah. Just go over to Ben's area right now.
Yeah.
Ben's small. Do you want some
extra ones? Yeah, these are big ones.
Can you compare whether or not it's going to be like what's over off of Pioneer Parkway and Harlow? Yeah. Is that about the size?
Yeah, probably
like
that. There may be, you know, might be one or two that's slightly bigger. It's hard to say. You know, I'd be speculating.
My concern is how fast people go through those. I mean,
sure.
Even though they're supposed to go very small, are you looking at putting in trees and things to kind of get people to kind of slow down a little bit, like
yeah.
you do in like a neighborhood or urban setting,
yeah,
as far as making sure the traffic is actually going the speed they should be going? I find that people just, that Pioneer Parkway one, people just, I mean, pedestrians would be standing there and it looks fearful
of their life, you know, because people just don't see that. The lights on with the blinking and all that kind of stuff. So I guess my thought would be to put some kind of landscaping design as far as slowing people. Sure. Yeah, and that's a good point for sure. And I think the roundabouts, with having them in there, they'll actually slow the general speed down on the corridor. But when your car is going from all the way from the west to the east, for example, if you were to measure the time it took to go from west to east, they'll actually make it to the end faster than if they were traditional signalized intersections, but they'll be slower in between. And the reason why it takes less time is that there's less wait time at those pinch points at between intersections because of the way the traffic flows. But I definitely think that as we get into the design, you know, we want to make sure that it's as safe as possible for pedestrians when you have multiple lanes.
Well, if you've ever been to Floralhurst in Portland, it's probably one of the first roundabouts in a while that I had ever seen. It's in a neighborhood, it's really large, but the way, because it's in an older neighborhood, just it seems like even as large as it is, people tend to really go slow through there, and I think it's because of the design.
Okay.
And the setup. I mean,
yeah, we'll take a look at that.
Yeah.
I do have to kind of piggyback on that thought. You know, the Harlow Pioneer Parkway crossing for pedestrians when you're headed east on Harlow Road, and turning onto Pioneer Parkway headed south. You are practically clear around the corner before you're on the pedestrians crossing Pioneer Parkway. You cannot see those lights flashing. And more than once, I have seen near accidents there with pedestrians. And so, you know, I don't know how you need to I think that needs to be looked at.
Sure.
That intersection needs to be looked at. But I think, you know, I'm totally with you. I think it has to be done in a way that visibility is good around the corner, so that you're sure that those folks that are trying to cross that thoroughfare, you know, people will stop.
Sure.
And they're visible.
Okay, those are really valid concerns, and I'll pass those on, share them with our engineers as they're working on the design piece, and my hope is that you guys will also have a chance to weigh in on that as we go through the design process.
Yeah,
and
I do. I think they work really well.
When we're having meetings with the designers and community members representing these concerns, freight, so forth, we can let you know what those are happening also.
We had a traffic engineer once, maybe two, talking about roundabouts and safety and accidents, fatality rates, about 10% of the normal segment intersections fatalities.
Yeah, it's substantially less.
Yeah. They don't go T-bones. It's all
T-bones.
Sides,
yeah.
Side brush.
Fewer accidents, but also the severity of accidents is less as well.
Slower speeds.
So really the key hurdle right now is NEPA.
Yes, correct, yeah. So that is a key hurdle. And
there are two levels, right?
Yeah, so we're looking at either something called a categorical exclusion, which would be the faster process, and that's what we're hoping for. The other process is called an EA, it's an environmental assessment. That's a more rigorous, lengthier process. And we'll know more soon here. It looks like we'll probably meet with Federal Highway Administration sometime later this month and get a better sense of which direction we're going. So, but that is the big hurdle.
Yeah, the reason I'm kind of getting back to that again is that involved in community development, Glenwood Place, I suppose, and they're wanting to get started first part of next year. I'm talking to those people, they say that's one of their uncertainties is how much land are they going to take for the roadway? And so they're kind of tentative about some of their planning because they don't know exactly what the right-of-way impact is going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
This will tell them pretty close.
Yeah. It's the idea.
Uncertainty isn't good for business or people's anxiety levels either. So the sooner that information can be clear and shared widely, that will be helpful to people. And again, as you were saying, none of it's a surprise to people. So that, you know, like let that other shoe drop, please, so that you can find out exactly where the line's going to be and when things are going to be happening would be useful to people. Also, may we add all of you to our interested parties list so that we can let you know when we find out if it's 6 or 12, Mr. Moe's already on, but...
Yeah.
Please.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Steve.
Yes,
I'm okay.
All right. Any other questions?
So, can you just get a general head nod then on the public outreach plan?
And he's been standing in there with a lot of integrity while people are sometimes emotional and both being clear and firm and compassionate, and I think he'd be really proud. So.
That's very exciting.
Okay, we're adjourned.